California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I am your host, Phil, and as always, with me is my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West, Camille. How are you doing tonight?
I am good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. On this rainy and cold San Diego couple days, I survived the flash floods. I didn't get washed away. Luckily, my place of employment is on higher ground, so I was able to escape it for a little bit. But I feel bad for all the people in San Diego who suffered a lot of flash floods. People's cars got washed away. People's cars got just completely submerged. We'll talk about how climate change has an effect on the budget tonight in a little bit. We're going to talk about the budget, but first I want to talk about the elephant in the room, the big warmongering elephant in the room. That would be Nikki Haley. as of tonight, it looks like they're already projecting that Donald Trump has won the New Hampshire primary. It's about 10-point split right now. So it looks like he's going to walk away with this no problem. Nikki Haley said she's not dropping out and will continue on. So here we have it. I think the primary is basically over at this point. Nikki Haley has really no path forward. We're just kind of watching this as it's coming in right now while we're recording this and while we're going live. So the interesting thing that I was reading on Twitter, though, is I guess in New Hampshire, it's an open primary. So you can, if you're a Democrat or independent, you can go in, like walk in and vote in the Republican primary. So there was a lot of issues of like Democrats were voting in this. They were voting for Nikki Haley. And I had honestly thought that was like a conspiracy theory of people who were like, Democrats are going to interfere and vote for Nikki Haley to defeat Trump. But it actually shows like a lot of Democrats did show up and vote for Nikki Haley and then said they're going to vote for Joe Biden anyway. So
is that confirmed?
Doesn't matter.
Like I saw a headline, not read the article, and it said Trump wrongly said Democrats can vote in this primary.
Actually, I was watching a clip from MSNBC, and they said the exit polls were, they were asking people on their way out which way they identify. And it was actually the minority of exit polls from MSNBC were showing it was Republicans. So it was mostly Democrats and independents who were voting against Trump for Nikki Haley. So I bet when you get to I don't know what the process is in South Carolina. I don't know if it's strictly Republican. I know here in California, I think it's strictly Republican. But I imagine once you get like a primary where it's strictly Republican, Trump will win by a landslide again, and Nikki Haley will have no choice but to drop out. Doesn't matter how many military lobbyists support her, she just has no path forward. So, any thoughts on Nikki Haley's loss?
Haley? I was going to say her and her 5-inch heels are just going to have to slide on out of this race. Irritates me. I know like a lot of people now, because she made the comment the other day about I was victimized as a brown girl. And I went through her like old tweets, and she has mentioned that like years ago, because people are like, what? She's pulling that now. This is the first time. She did mention, but most of it was in a positive, like, at first the community looked down on us, but then, you know, we were a part of the community and we were very accepted and loved. But it does just feel desperate to me to pull the race card at the last minute. Like, you totally lost, you know, in the last one, and now you're like, right, like, it's just felt desperate. And then I don't like all her references of high heels, and she's a quitter anyway. She quit when she was governor, she quit when she was the ambassador, and I feel like a lot of her responses are emotional, and you always hear me say it, we're women, we're psychotic, we're emotional. But, and I'm not saying that women don't have a place in politics. I don't mean that at all. But when you really bring that up on all your debates and everything, it's just like, this is how you're going to lead. You can't even like be rational for an hour on stage. Just no. And of course she's like, war. I love war.
Yeah. I mean, That's the biggest thing for me is like, I'm always anti-war. I've been anti-war my entire political active life. and the fact that she is always so pro-war and has been pro-war and will continue to be pro-war. I was subscribing to the theory that she would be the replacement for Joe Biden. This was sort of a theory cobbled together by things that I heard, but my theory was Nikki Haley will be the replacement for Joe Biden because she'll play ball with the establishment. She'll make the military industrial complex happy. Everyone in DC will continue to make money. They'll let her have like her cute little like tax cut, which is technically like tax shifting, because most Republican tax cut bills are actually not tax cutting. They're just tax shifting. What they do is they'll say, oh, we're going to reduce your personal income tax. We're cutting that, but instead we're jacking up taxes over here. So the federal government never really loses any money. The House always wins. So they'd let her have that win. She maybe has a good economy. She gives everyone military industrial complex contracts. And yeah, she plays ball. And the most sinister part about it would be that the corporate media and everybody can say, look, our elections are not rigged. They're not slanted in any way. A Republican has won. A Republican beat Joe Biden. He left, you know, peaceful transfer of power. You know, with people didn't like Joe Biden. He was voted out. Now we have Nikki Haley, who's a Republican. See, look, this is how America works. And then everyone can go on and
the elections
can bash Trump. That's basically how they'll spin it and be like, well, if elections are stolen, why did Nikki Haley beat Joe Biden? Trump couldn't beat Joe Biden. So clearly Nikki Haley's the better candidate. We'll never get to find that out, though, because I think she'll be long gone before then. But yeah, so that was my conspiracy theory. I don't think it's going to happen anymore. I think she's going to get crushed in South Carolina if she continues on. And here we go. Trump wins the primary. I kind of feel bad. I think one of the biggest losers who is going to suffer the most from Trump winning the primary already is going to be the California GOP.
Okay.
And
go on.
I'll explain why. Because usually in these big presidential election years, when there's a GOP convention, usually there's two or three candidates who are still kind of kicking around. They're part of this. In 2016, I had gone to the GOP convention. Trump and Cruz were still kind of neck and neck and fighting it out. So you got both Trump and Ted Cruz showed up. And as you and I both know, they sell these tickets for these dinners and these lunches for like an exorbitant amount of money. And the GOP makes a ton of money. California GOP makes a ton of money off of it. So now that there's basically the primaries over, I feel bad for the California GOP. Kind of gets left out in the rain. They're not going to make any money. You know, asking $600 a plate or $1,000 a plate to go see Donald Trump or something, he's not going to show up. Why would he care about showing up now? He's won the primary. So,
good point.
I should have been a little bit more sarcastic about that. I don't really care that the California GOP is losing money, you know, by charging exorbitant fees.
Right.
But anyway,
I know that's not what we're talking about, but I have more questions on your opinion on this.
Sure.
Because we have so often talked about Gavin Newsom, we're convinced is somehow going to get in there, but then we're also like, well, if it's not now, it's going to be 2028. Do you think there's still a possibility of Gavin Newsom coming in? But now there's also like a theory that Michelle Obama, which I don't think is going to happen at all. But what are your thoughts?
I think, so like I said, I think Nikki Haley would have been the establishment pick to replace Joe Biden because she's already in the race and it would look kind of normal for her to just defeat Joe Biden. Now that she's going to get trounced, they're going to have to figure out something because Trump will likely, I mean, it just shows poll after poll. He's trouncing Biden in all the swing states. Do I think he gets in? There's still a possibility. I think he's still geared up and ready to kind of slide in there if the Democratic Party, you know, twists his arm and he like reluctantly steps up because duty called or whatever. I will never believe that Michelle Obama will run for president just because it doesn't make sense. The Obamas are worth like a bajillion dollars at this point. They enjoy their private lives. They get to do whatever the heck they want. They go make a speech and make $800,000. there's no incentive for them to run and run for president. If anything, it's easier for them at this point to be kingmakers and continue to pull strings from behind the curtains, which we all know he's sort of been doing recently. I think it is one of those things where it's easier and it's a better lifestyle for the Obamas to have influence over the entire party and whoever does get in, if there's a Democrat in the White House next year, rather than do it themselves. I just don't think Michelle Obama wants to put herself through all the scrutiny and everything. And, you know, I also don't think a lot of people really want to go back to that era. So I would rule out the Michelle Obama thing. Gavin Newsom is just kind of, he's hanging out there. He's kind of just doing his thing. He's still trying to campaign nationally. He made a whole big point of dancing on Ron DeSantis's campaign grave because it's all over. So we'll see what he does. I think he's waiting in the wings now that Trump looks like he's clearly going to win the primary and it's going to be Trump versus Biden. I think there'll probably be a better chance if they try and figure out how to get rid of Biden and dump him. So yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
I actually said all those exact same things about Michelle Obama to one of our mutual friends the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, this is why I don't think she's going to run. And exactly your points.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars and they get like incredible private life. They get to do whatever they want. Why would you want to be president? Like, that's stupid. Like, right. Put yourself through that and the stress of it all. Like, you still have to run a country as president.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Biden doesn't really run a country, but everyone else runs it for him.
Credit to Nikki Haley. She could walk on a stage in 5-inch heels. Biden can't even walk on a stage. So.
Yeah, that's true. So credit where credit is due for Nikki Haley. They had a Senate debate last night. I want to get your thoughts real quick. I didn't watch it. I forgot it was even on. So you had watched it. Why don't you give me your thoughts and rundown of
my thoughts will be quick because I kind of tuned out at a certain point. So Alex Mikkelsen was the moderator. I think he did an excellent job. I know you had kind of pointed out one question that you thought was absolutely ridiculous today on Instagram, but Barbara Lee, all identity politics, which just gets obnoxious after a while. Like, she just, you know, I'm the only one who's Black. I'm the only one who's been homeless. Therefore, I'm the only one who knows anything about everything. And it's like, there's far more people in this nation than that are Black and or homeless. So what about all the other things? Adam Schiff is very smart. Yes, I don't agree with him politically. He's very smart. I thought Katie Porter was popular, but I read that she's like in the bottom of the polls, and she has like a squeaky mousy voice that just irritated me to no end. Garvey was an embarrassment to the GOP. He either just didn't know what he was talking about, or I get it. He's not a politician. He's probably not used to being on stage in a setting like that, but he would talk really slow and then he would have long pauses. And I'm like, does he not know what he's going to say? Is he trying to think of what's next? And he didn't really want to give a lot of direct answers. And I mean, we were talking about this before the show. Yes, everyone on stage disagrees with you, but be firm in your beliefs. They're going to have more respect for you if you at least say what you know, just tell the truth, say what you believe in versus like refuse to answer or run around the answer. And so then I have just kind of tuned out. I'm like, okay, Adam Schiff's probably going to win this. I didn't think a Republican was going to win anyway. I don't care. Props to Alex for running. Like, he was a great moderator. I do like him. I think he mostly fairly reports. And so that part was interesting to see him moderate. And then I tuned out. So if anyone is watching and watched it last night, let us know in the comments what you thought.
Yeah, the reason I did call him out, any other reporter, I don't think I would have made a big deal. I would have just been like, eh, whatever, that's typical. Alex is very fair. He's one of the more fair, better journalists in California, whether you like him or not, or you think he's too cushy on Newsom or whatever. He's one of the good ones, him and like Ashley Zavala, she's a Capitol reporter. There's some that are really good. So it was kind of just, it felt shocking, not shocking, but it just kind of felt disappointing for Alex to ask that question about, like, do you support Trump or do you plan on voting for Trump? And it's like, okay, like, there's going to come a day when you can't paint every Republican as like a Trump supporter. I don't know if that's like in 4 years or in 10 years or in 20 years, but it feels like it, you know, that's the go-to is like, oh, were you a Trump supporter? Oh, okay. Well, then we can, like, you know, just disregard everything you're saying and you know, we're going to prejudice. And I don't think that was his intent, I think, but it comes off that way. It's like, and all the other candidates from what I saw jumped on it as ammo of like, oh, well, he can't even say if he supports Trump or he'll vote for Trump. And we can't have that.
That's how it initially started. He didn't just, like, that wasn't Alex's starting question. It was actually, I think, if I remember correctly, it was Katie Porter who was like, can we please talk about that? And then they all kind of started shouting at Garvey, and then he's not answering exactly. And so then Alex brings it back to, well, you have said that you will support the nominee. It's Trump. Are you going to support Trump? Is that, like... And they finally moved on from it. But
yeah, well, it's, you know, 4-1. So it's amazing he's even on that debate stage. So
I know, I thought Eric
anyway
popular. Yeah, anyway, California.
Eric Early is like a perennial runner. He just runs for like literally everything. He like pulls a name out of the hat every year and is like, what am I going to run for this year? I guess if you just get in that circle, you can continually be a perennial candidate. We know a couple people like that who are perennial candidates. All right. So to the meat of what we are actually talking about tonight, we've been talking about we wanted to do this episode a while back. It's a good thing we waited because there's been a lot more articles and opinions on this that have come out. Specifically, we're talking about why is California broke? And we say it's broke because the legislative analyst office came out in December and said we are facing a $68 billion deficit. Now, the numbers have been disputed. Obviously, Gavin Newsom has come out and disputed and said, well, it's not $68 billion, maybe it's $30 billion, da, da, da. But either way, we went from a $100 billion surplus that Gavin Newsom was running all over the country bragging about to now a $68 billion deficit, which looks horrible. So that stark difference of like, well, how did we get here? Why did this happen? I thought would be interesting to kind of dive into, like, why does our budget fluctuate so much? Why do we have deficits? Why do we have surpluses? What are they going to do about it? Is it going to get any better? I'm going to read a little bit of CalMatters, one of our favorite sources. Officials noted that it is partly because the budget has grown so much in recent years, talking about why it's $68 billion. The most recent was more than $300 billion, and the state has closed similar or worse pending gaps by percentage in the past. He's the legislative analyst. He's sort of in the middle of all this, who came out with this prediction. He said, quote, I go with the word serious, a serious budget problem. I would stop short of calling it a crisis. Severe winter storms prompted the federal government to delay the income tax filing deadline for most Californians from April until November, and the state followed suit, giving an incomplete picture when legislators and the governor crafted the budget this summer. It already accounted for a $30 billion deficit after 2 years of record surpluses driven by economic recovery and the federal aid related to the coronavirus pandemic. But those collections were ultimately another $26 billion below estimates, a drop of 25% from the prior year, digging a financial hole based on money the state committed in its spending plan. This year looks weak as well, according to finance officials. California has been hit particularly hard by inflation, which pinched the housing market, a stock market downturn, affecting capital gains and a drop in investments in the tech industry, which has pulled back on initial public offerings. Overall tax revenues are projected to be $58 billion below assumptions in the multi-year budget window. And then finally, a quote from my state senator, Brian Jones. Hopefully the supermajority will see it's time for more realistic budget strategy. Instead of throwing money at a laundry list of projects, that sounds nice on the national television debate stage. So, any initial thoughts before we break it down as to why does California have, it goes up and down so much?
Well, I have questions.
Okay. I will do my best.
Do we have like a use it or lose it policy? Like we had the $100 billion deficit. And I know that they were like, well, what are we going to do with it? Like spend it. And they, you know, they didn't want to save it. Is it, do they have to spend it or it goes away? Or were they allowed to save it? Do you know?
I think they were allowed to save a lot of it. That's sort of one. I think they said some of the estimates are like that there's $30 billion or something, $30 to $50 billion in like rainy day funds. Mm-hmm. So when you have that surplus, you can put a lot of it into these rainy day savings funds. There was discussion that the surplus was so much that under California Constitution, you actually have to, you're supposed to return some of that money back. Like if you raise so much money that you have like this enormous surplus, you're supposed to, under the California Constitution, give that back to taxpayers. Of course, that never happened because they figured out where to spend it.
I didn't, but didn't some people get like $200, like little Visa cards or something?
I think that was part of like the COVID stimulus. That was like the, I think that was probably like the COVID stimulus. Yeah, we found one. Funny enough, like we found one and it was addressed to my wife and I looked at it and I was like, this is a gift card. You can use this. She's like, I thought it was a scam. I'm like, no, it's like a legit gift card with money on it. Like you should activate it. So why not? It's our money. They're just giving it back to us.
Right.
But I think that's interesting that they brought up the coronavirus pandemic because there was a lot of, I think there was a lot of discussion about the surplus kind of came on the tail end of all this federal spending. So like all these states were flush with federal spending, huge bailouts. And a lot of states showed a lot of surplus. And then as soon as like that federal money got cut off, a lot of these states kind of, a lot of blue states actually tumbled back into the red because they were trying to spend that money on other things that they weren't supposed to, or they were padding their numbers. It made the budget look great when you have $100 billion surplus. The coronavirus federal aid, and I'm assuming it's between Trump and Biden, definitely helped California because it definitely increased their budgets and their line items and their budgets. So it's interesting that they did kind of point that out, that was probably one thing that buoyed it. But the interesting thing about why the budget is like this is volatility. So what that means, okay, I'm going to try and break this down. The reason California goes up and down with our budget is because, well, one, thanks to Howard Jarvis Tax Institute and Prop 13, which they try and chip away at every single year, property taxes actually remain relatively low in California as long as you've held on to your house for a long time. Like once you're locked in, you're just locked in for property taxes. So they've been trying to chip away at that for a long time because property taxes would be a consistent gauge of, well, it'd be a consistent stream of revenue. They would know, they'd be able to look at the property values and be able to gauge, okay, this many people own houses. This is the value of these houses. We're going to get this much in property taxes. But because of Prop 13, it keeps them low. It's not going to be as much. So a lot of the money in California that comes in revenue comes from billionaires, the highest earners, and a lot of companies, like tech companies. So Silicon Valley, stuff like that. So that's where they make a lot of their money. IPOs are usually pretty big. So a lot of these tech companies in Silicon Valley that have these huge IPOs and make billions and billions of dollars, they end up having to pay a lot of this into taxes into California, which helps their treasuries. However, there hasn't been a lot of activity. Silicon Valley is kind of drying up a little bit. There's a lot of companies that are moving out. We all know that Tesla moved out for a while and came back. Oracle was another one that moved out. So a lot of these companies are moving out and there hasn't been a lot of IPOs recently for a lot of these tech companies. And so because of that, also most notably, a lot of the highest earners are also moving out of California. So when you base all of your revenue streams on these sort of volatile kind of factors, then you get this issue of 1 year you could have $100 billion surplus and 1 year you could have a $68 billion surplus. So thoughts before I get into this next article?
Well, so in some ways it feels like you hear stories of, you know, like most lottery winners go broke because they don't know how to manage that. Like they win all this money and they don't know how to manage it, what to do with it. They buy a bunch of useless toys and have all their fun. And then all of a sudden they're like in debt. And it feels like that's what California did. It just feels like California won the lottery, but there's just no accountability up there. And like, seems like pretty much the majority of them are just idiots with how they're spending. And they were like, all right, we're just going to do all the things and oops, we're in debt now. That's how it feels to me.
Yeah. It feels like a lot of, and this probably goes back to what we discussed like a couple of weeks ago with the new laws. It feels like everyone throws in their laundry list of like what they want. And since there's 2,000 bills introduced, everybody has a laundry list of what they want and what they're going to spend state money on. And by the time you get through and you have, you know, by the summer, you're supposed to figure out a budget and then you pass that budget. And then because they didn't know what the revenues were going to be, they overblew that budget by a huge amount. And a lot of these people and a lot of legislators were like, wait a second, am I going to lose my funding for what, you know, my little pet project, for my little laundry list thing? Am I not going to be able to go back to my constituents and say like, oh, we're not going to spend this money anymore. You're not going to get that. That's what we promised you. So a lot of Democrats are really upset about this. And obviously Newsom has to kind of like work his way around it. But yeah, you're right. It's like they see all this money and they're like, well, there's plenty of money for everybody to get their little pet project off the ground. So why can't I say, okay, well, I'm going to put my bill in. I'm going to say it's going to spend about this much money and it's going to be there when I get there. Like one law that they passed, which they've already put on hold, Newsom's already put on hold, is the minimum wage increase for healthcare workers, which was a big thing that they were all championing and getting excited about. And he was kind of like, well, not so fast. We might not have that in the budget for you after all. So there's a lot of these things that he's going to have to massage and figure out like how to, I guess, technically work with his constituents and people who support him and tell them like, there's no money for you. So, you know, that whole thing that we promised for you, not going to happen. So in the budget, it's going to be, he proposed a budget, but we're not really going to get like the final budget until like, I think June or something. They have to pass a budget for next year. So, I wanted to read a little bit more of this article. I apologize to anyone listening if this gets like a little too wonky for you, but I think it's important that we all know like what the heck's going on here. Let's see. This is also from CalMatters. As California's array of services expanded, so did the number of budget stakeholders seeking larger pieces of the pie or protecting what they had. The field of play became immensely larger after voters passed Prop 13, the iconic property tax limit, in 1978, and the state became the basic financier of schools and a big factor in local government budgets. At Governor Gavin Newsom's latest budget proposal unveiled last week notes California's progressive tax system, whereby nearly half of all personal income tax in the state is paid by the top 1% earners, has contributed to extreme budget volatility over the years. That volatility is the chief reason for the budget's projection of $31.5 billion deficit just 12 months after Newsom declared that the state had a $97 billion surplus and bragged that, quote, no other state in American history has ever experienced a surplus as large as this. Going to your point, periodic revenue surges, such as last year's $97 billion paper surplus, whet appetites of Democrat allies, such as unions and social welfare and medical care advocates, for additional spending and generate resistance when times get tough. So yeah, exactly to your point of when Democrats see $97 billion in surplus, they all line up, all their supporters, all the unions and all the lobbyists line up and go, I want to get my piece of the pie. So pass legislation where I can make some of this money. However, with the big volatility, can't really do that anymore. You were dead on accurate that this is exactly what happens. They win the lottery when they see a $97 billion surplus. And now they don't have it. So now they got to figure it out. Do, 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 do. A lot of these articles are sort of kind of repeats of each other. If you have any thoughts while I'm looking over which article to pick next?
So I will say there's obviously not one single reason why this happened. And it didn't just happen at night. It was, you know, it was a few years in the making, and it was several things that probably some were out of everyone's control. Most were, could have been controlled with some accountability.
Let's see. This is an article from Politico you sent me. This is entitled How Silicon Valley is Fueling California's Budget Crisis. So we talked about this and how the Silicon Valley is basically one of the biggest generators of wealth for the state. I made some highlights. Let me just follow this up. A lot of this was repeats of stuff we said. Quote, right after the pandemic, the combination of the zero interest rate environment and the like led to really high valuations and soaring stock prices in public markets. As the Federal Reserve hiked interest rates, investment slowed and capital gain tax faltered. The S&P 500 slid by 19% in 2022, while the more tech-heavy NASDAQ index declined by about 33%. California revenues fell in response more sharply than virtually anyone predicted. Newsom's Department of Finance bakes those sort of economic factors into its deficit projections. Unlike other state analysts, that could explain why Newsom told Fox 11 News recently that the state deficit is, quote, smaller than what has been advertised before releasing an estimate of his administration to close the gap. Some progressives would like to see California go further, including by tweaking or outright lifting Prop 13, a cap on property taxes approved during a 1970s tax revolt. But tapping that more stable revenue stream is a third rail for many homeowning voters, and legislative changes have stalled. Instead, the state draws more heavily from income taxes and the investments of the wealthiest Californians, and there's little sign that will change. So again, because of Prop 13, thankfully, it's kind of forced California into this kind of boom and bust cycle where they have to rely on income taxes. They have to rely on taxes from corporations. They're not going to get that standard, you know, steady stream of money from property taxes. And progressives feel like they need to chip away at Prop 13, which is not popular with, I don't think that's ever popular with California voters. I think whenever Prop 13 comes up on the ballot for them to try and chip away at it, it always gets voted down resoundingly. Because if you just tell people like their property taxes are going to go up if they vote for this prop, usually everyone kind of runs out against it. Unless you're an apartment owner or a city dweller or something like that.
Yeah. And then they were trying to do the one with like industrial buildings, I think, or something that failed. That was a few years ago and everyone was pretty mad about that. Commercial real estate, trying to increase that. That didn't go through, I think, as far as I remember.
So, okay, so we got the landscape of like why California goes through this boom and bust cycle. Now the question is, how are we going to solve it?
Do we have to figure that out?
Thankfully, we don't have to figure it out. It's not our job to figure it out. Yeah, it does look like they're going to pull from some rainy day funds, but there's not that much in rainy day to cover a $68 billion deficit. So there is that issue that you can't pull from everything. And they are projecting, and it's interesting, like you look at these different articles, like I'm looking at this one from Marketplace, that Newsom says it's $38 billion. The essay from the LAO is $68 billion. And so they got to figure out how they're going to do this. They're obviously going to have to cut. They're going to have to hold back on stuff. This is a quote. States have big problems with having enough prison guards, making sure their school systems have enough bus drivers. So another issue, and this is kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent. If you think this is bad, right? If you think that us going into a $68 billion budget deficit because, like you said, Democrats don't know how to not spend money. If you think this is bad, I found this article from the California Policy Center. Love these guys. Lance Christensen, who was a guest and friend of the show, writes here. This was as of February 28, 2022. If you had to guess how much the liabilities for the entire state and local governments is for California, what would you guess?
I have no idea.
This is different. So again, it's just a little primer. Okay, same thing happens with the federal government. Republicans talk about it all the time. They say there's debt and then there's deficit. There's deficit spending where we spend too much and we don't have enough money. The debt is where we owe a lot of money and we have to pay that back. California has the same problem. We've been talking about the deficit. Now California also has debt that they have to figure out how to pay back. So what's your guess as to what the amount of debt is for California? California's total state and local government debt, and this was as of 2022, so it's probably gone up, is about $1.6 trillion, or about half the state's GDP. So $1.6 trillion, $40,000 per capita, and that's for all the state and the local districts. That's how much debt there is in California. And a lot of this is underfunded pensions. So let's see, I was trying to find a number. Unfunded pensions. I think they said there's barely enough money to cover even 2/3 of the pensions that have been promised to all the California state and local employees. So CalPERS, which is like the California pension plan, doesn't have money, and continually every year it loses, it has less and less money to keep up with the amount of people it has to pay out. So, yeah. Well, not Social Security, but yeah, exactly. It's like Social Security. Everyone's paying into it. Well, we're sort of all paying into it. But a lot of these pensions and these public employees, I don't know what they're going to do. There's going to have to be pension reform, because you're looking at $1.6 trillion in debt. And this was now almost, February 20. This was almost 2 years ago. It's $1.6 trillion. So as if things, that's why the title of this episode was not just, hey, we have a $68 billion deficit. What are we doing about it? The question is, why is California broke? And we're trying to figure that out. I mean, we have an idea of why California is broke, is because they spend way too much money, and they have every pet project under the sun that they want to spend money on. The thing about California is that it's just crystallized and metastasized, where it's more government on top of more government on top of more government. And at a certain point, you keep paying for more and more government, and you can't sustain it after a certain point. You sent me something that said, how many agencies are there in California? Like, how many state agencies? Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at homelessness is probably the perfect example of why California just, these policies just don't work. And you'll hear a lot of Democrats who say, well, we didn't spend enough money. That's the problem with homelessness. We need to spend more money. But you're telling me that $20 billion over the past 10 years is not enough money on homelessness, and that it's increased by 40%, that it actually hasn't gone down, homelessness. They haven't cured or gotten close to figuring out homelessness in California. But you're right. This is the problem with California, is that there is no problem that California Democrats don't see without solving by spending more money and raising taxes to spend more money. That's why they chomp at the bit to try and get rid of Prop 13, because they need that extra stream of revenue. There's never enough money for California to implement its utopian vision. It's like, we have a shirt in the store that says, if progressive policies worked, California would be a utopia. Which is true, because these are things in kind of broad picture. Why do I think this is gaining so much traction, as opposed to other states that probably have budget deficits? I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's because Gavin Newsom wants to run for president. And you can't be running for president with a state that's $68 billion in the red. His opponents are going to make this a field day, where they can say, you had $100 billion deficit the year, or $100 billion surplus the year before, Now you have a $68 billion deficit. So what the heck happened? How is this proper management? How can we trust you to run our country if we give you a surplus and then you spend it all? So I think that's the bigger picture of why this makes, why this is catching so much news. I mean, California, it's important. We're one of the biggest states. But I think because Gavin Newsom is running for president, that is why this is picking up so much steam. And people are going to use this. So I don't know. What are your thoughts? They'd kill a lot of people. I mean, with the amount of people wouldn't want to buy homes. They look at the prices of homes plus taxes. And they'd say, I'm not paying $8,000 a month in a mortgage and property taxes to live in California. So and ironically, I remember, I forget what debate it was. I think it was one of the ones we watched with Newsom, where they were talking about, you know, why is your California is on one of the highest progressive tax structures in the country. This idea of progressive tax structure. So if you don't know what that means, it's basically the highest income earners, the taxes go up as you progress up the income ladder. So the highest earners, they pay the most. So people were, I'm kind of blanking on what this was. He's trying to compare like apples and oranges. And he's like, well, technically, like, you know, when you look at like California's income taxes and then you look at like what people in Florida pay, it's actually, we come out a little bit better because the property tax in Florida is higher than the property tax here in California. And that's, you know, we have one of the best property taxes that we keep low for our Californians, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting here going, because the Howard Jarvis tax association or tax group was the one who pushed this. And your whole party has been trying to undo Prop 13 for 40 years now. So it's kind of funny. He's taking credit for Prop 13 and using it to way like muddle the kind of shift the numbers or muddle the numbers a little bit to say like, oh, well, because people pay less. And oh, he was trying to compare Texas. That's what it was. He was trying to say Texas has much higher property tax. So when it comes out in the wash, like you end up paying more taxes in Texas than you do in California, which I don't think anyone's buying anyway, because there's no state income tax in California or in Texas. Not to mention all the other fees that people deal with, like $500 car registration. Like we know some people in Arizona. Yeah, I think we were talking to someone, we know some people, we have some family in Arizona, and we were like, oh, you know, we just had to pay our registrations for like both of our cars. And it was like, it was a ridiculous amount. It was like $1,200 for two cars. And they almost like choked and they were like, I'm sorry, how much did you spend for car registration? Just the registration. It was like, well, yeah, it was almost like $1,200. Oh my gosh. And they were like, we paid like $40 each car. I'm like, $40? $40 for each car in Arizona. I'm like, it could be more than that. I don't know. But it was definitely under $100. And I was like, are you kidding? You pay that little? And then they were even telling us how somehow because they paid too much in property taxes, they got a refund and they like lowered their taxes in Arizona. So I'm like, man, talk about night and day. So, it, you know, it's not just the income tax. It's literally everything else too. It's registration, it's gas tax fees, it's sales tax, which is 8% on literally everything outside of food. It's just everything is, they get you one way or another, whether they want to call it taxes or not. So, all right, going back to the budget deficit. We've talked a lot about, and we'll talk about this in one more story before we wrap up for the hour. We've talked a lot about the actual reasons why there's a budget deficit. Do you want to hear the one reason some people are saying there's actually a budget deficit? Okay, it has nothing to do with the fact that there's these volatile tech companies and IPOs and all that financial mumbo jumbo and inflation and Fed interest rates and all that stuff. The reason we have a budget deficit is because of climate change. Shocker. This is from the Los Angeles Times, who I think just announced they're laying off 155 employees. So maybe it's because they, So maybe it's because they write articles like this. They didn't say we're laying them off because someone wrote this horrible article. So yeah, there was this whole article in the LA Times basically saying, who is to blame for California's budget woes? Try Mother Nature. Mother Nature slammed the state in winter and spring with record snow and storms that flooded entire towns such as Planada and Pajaro. You know, bonus points if you know where those are in California. Capitola was hit with a bomb cyclone that all but destroyed the pier. Tulare Lake reappeared in the Central Valley, submerging homes and crops and revealing the fragility of the expensive levee. The damage of that extreme weather cost $4.6 billion and took 22 lives, according to the National Centers for Environmental Information. Our weather was so volatile and devastating that even the IRS had mercy, delaying the deadline for the majority of the state's residents to file taxes first to October and then to November, which meant that no one really knew, though certainly there were indicators, how much we were spending that we didn't really have until a couple months ago when those taxes were finally tallied and came up short. Quote, this has been a hard year, said Gavin Newsom. That's sad. So, yeah, this article goes on to say Amazon couldn't show up with his pallet of hair gel. Do you think he just gets it at Costco at this point, that much hair gel? He probably buys it in bulk at this point. So yeah, that's basically, I mean, you can go read the article yourself. But yeah, they basically said that it's because of climate change. That's why we have a budget deficit. Okay. Last story that I do want to talk about on a serious note. If you think nerds like us are the only people who care about this budget deficit, you would be mistaken. Because a UC Berkeley Institute of Governmental Studies co-sponsor with the Los Angeles Times did a poll, and it said that 57% of California voters found this to be an extremely serious problem. So, extremely serious. Quote, voters are concerned about it, and they're going to hold it against the governor and the legislature to do something about it, end quote. There was another one. When asked how they think California should offset the deficit, the majority of voters, 51%, support cuts to government services, and 35% want to use the rainy day fund. Among less popular savings measures, 17% of voters want to borrow from special funds. So, and then the governor, yeah, I mean, is that going to be axed now because of we don't have the money for it? Well, fair enough. But this is, you know, again, this is kind of, if we're reading the tea leaves here, and when people say like, give up on California, it's not worth it, just forget California, abandon California. I say nay, because read the tea leaves here of this poll. It says 51% of the people in this poll, this is a UC Berkeley poll, 51% support cuts to government services. A majority, a slim majority, but a majority of those taken said cut government services. Sounds like a pretty conservative idea in California to cut government services. 35 want to use the rainy day fund. That's fine. I mean, that's the point of why you save it. The least popular option, with only 13% of people supporting it, was raising taxes. So out of all the polls. So if you're looking at this from a broader perspective, you have a poll from UC Berkeley that shows the majority of people want the state to cut services and cut back, and a small, tiny little minority want to raise taxes. I don't know. Take from that what you will, but go ahead. Well, no, because when you ask questions like if you're a Republican who supports Donald Trump, then everything goes out the window and everybody just sees orange man bad and they vote against it. So, and every Democrat lines up in Sacramento and figures out what they're going to spend money on. And I guess, yeah, it's one of those things where if you have a good ballot measure and you have a good proposition, it might be something that you could get passed and added to the California Constitution. And that might be the end run for these policies. Like, I've said this before on the show, and I've said this to a lot of people. The interesting thing about California is they hate Republicans. Yet when you look at propositions and how they vote on propositions, they're actually very conservative. So they always vote not to raise taxes. They always vote to not raise bonds and take on more debt. They always usually vote not to start some new government agency they'd never heard of. They always vote to protect Prop 13. So it's interesting when you look at it in the big totality of it. Voters in California, there's a lot of them who lean conservative. It's just the Republican brand is so tarnished in California. There's not much you can really do about it. Also, I didn't know that 47% of Californians actually disapprove of Gavin Newsom. That's for a guy who is going to run for president to have half of your state that's deep blue not liking you is not a good sign. Oh, last point I want to make. One of our favorite assembly members, you know, he's young, he's up and coming. He lives in his mother's basement, Alex Lee from San Jose. He proposed raising taxes under his proposed Wealth Tax Act, which would impose a 1.5 tax on net worth above 1% tax on net worth exceeding $50 million and an additional 0.5 tax on net worth over $1 billion as of 2026. This is already dead in the water. Newsom knows who his buddies are and said he would veto this if he ever made it across his desk. And I think it didn't even like make it out of committee. So, but that's Alex Lee. So he's like 20 something and his solution to everything is raise taxes. Yeah. When you go straight from college to being an assembly member, it's not surprising your view. Yeah. You're still on your parents' insurance and living in their basement. Like, it's not surprising. You don't really understand how the real world works and why people would push back on this. So, all right, we're coming up on the hour. I think we covered a lot of ground. What are your, you have any final thoughts about the budget deficit before we log off? Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where that inadvertently it forces our government to face the realities of the choices they make. And that's just the truth of it. When there's no money, there's no money. So they got to do something. So when are they going to address the $1.6 trillion in debt? Who knows? Be great to have a prominent politician bring up that and how we're going to pay that down, because no one ever talks about it. So do I think it's going to get better? No. I think because of the volatility and the boom and bust of how we raise revenue in California, like you said, when there's a big surplus, everybody lines up and says, I want my pet project paid for. Then the next year, there's a huge deficit, and then all those things can't be paid for. So we'll see. We'll see how they go about this and what they cut. This is going to be a long, tough negotiation from here until June, right? June is when the budget has to be finalized. Yeah, they called Trump like right away. So, yeah, they called Trump like when I checked before I hopped on. So it was like over already. Still staying in. Got to make that money. And, you know, on that subject, not really has to do with the budget deficit. You know what? How many hundreds of millions did people waste on loser candidates who were not going to win or beat Trump? And that if you had spread that money out to state legislature races, the impact you would have on the country is astounding. But I mean, millions of dollars for Chris Christie to run. Think about that. People spent money on Chris Christie to run for president right down the toilet. No one cares. And people wonder why, like, you know, nothing gets done at the local level. So you just piss that money away. So I don't know. That's my thoughts. We could be spending that money on changing local races at state legislatures and county races and stuff like that, but it's not sexy enough. People don't really care about that. They care about presidential and congressional races. So anyway, on that note, budget deficit. hopefully we'll keep an eye on it. Maybe we'll do a follow-up in June when they actually come out with the new budget and we can kind of review it and go over it. But for now, if anyone knows Brian Jones, put us in connection. We want to talk to him about the budget deficit. All right. Well, with that said, that's the budget deficit. Hope you learned something tonight. Any other final thoughts before we sign off? Cool. That's basically it. As I like to end every show, why am I blanking now? I like to end every show. Oh, make sure you like, share, subscribe, review. It's been a long week. Like, share. Well, long week from last week. It feels like it's been a long week since last week. Like, share, subscribe, review, comment. It helps in the algorithm, helps more people find us. And the best thing you can do to support this show that is absolutely free is share this episode or share this show with somebody that you think would be interested in this show in California politics and updates and discussion like this. And with that said, we'll see you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody. Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.